The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Matt B. Davis. It's a beautiful Tuesday. You're hearing this on a Wednesday. That's right. And have I mentioned the many, many episodes I have on the can? I have one from the Super Bowl, ladies and gentlemen, that I don't want to spoil and tell you who's on it, but it's some pretty good people. And I put out those two episodes right after the Super Bowl and then waited. Then they got lost in the shuffle, yada, yada. But there's lots more of those to come. But they're definitely there to come. So stay tuned for those. And just a quick look at my list here. I've got six or seven more that are going to be coming out on the following Wednesdays. That looks like our day for a while. Wednesdays for the ATL podcast. Do you have a guest that you'd like to see on this program? Go ahead and drop me a note. MattBDavis@iCloud.com and or reach out to me on the social. I'm Matt B. Davis on all the platforms, and you can follow this show on ATL Podcast. Did you enjoy Kyle Stapleton? I did. K-Staps. Saw him right after that at Creative Mornings. Was great to see him. I'd never been to a Creative Mornings. Everyone told me they were awesome, and I finally made one. And speaking was one Winona Satcher, who I'll be setting up an interview with as well, because ATL peeps is what I do. All right, let's get in. Wait a minute, I got to do that thing that I do. Ready? On today's program, Stephen Franklin from Das BBQ. Stephen and I have not known each other very long, but he was definitely someone that people said, you got to talk to that guy. He's got a great story. He's got a great business. If you've checked out his BBQ, and perhaps you already have, you're probably enjoying it. Let's not dilly-dally. Let's get right to it. Stephen and I, from a few weeks ago, away we go.
Year two right now, we're at a lot of financial reporting,
right?
As you can imagine. So that kind of that.
Well, what the hell is your background? Where did you grow up? Let's start there.
There you go. Where did I grow up?
Yeah.
Here, right about 3 miles, about 5 miles from here. East Clifton.
Okay. Real Atlantan.
Real Atlantan. Went to Fernbank Elementary. My dad in 1970, I was born here in 75, at the last year that the Emory Hospital on the, what is that, Clifton.
Right.
Had a delivery unit. And 3 months after I was born, moved out to Oklahoma City. My dad was getting his PhD. He was hired back here in 1978 by Emory, the professor in the business school, and grew up on East Clifton until I was 13. Went to Fernbank Elementary. Then they shipped me down to Woodward in fifth grade. Apparently, I needed more discipline. As you can imagine, right?
Were you like a fuck up? You got to talk a little bit closer to this. You don't have to, like I said,
you can sit
comfortably and move it back.
Sure. There we go.
You look super comfy.
All right. I think it was one of those deals. My sister really wanted to go to a private school. I didn't. I wanted to go to Fernbank and then Druid Hills.
Right.
My friend, we were all skate rats, skateboard knuckleheads, right? Yeah, exactly. And so that's all I really cared about doing. And I played soccer. I was a year-round soccer player. So when I was 13, my folks moved us to Vinings over by the near the river there. And that was cool, I mean, in its own way. But it was very different than Emory. And I continued at Woodward through all his graduation. So fifth grade through 12th. Then I went to UGA. Went there, got out in 4 years, believe it or not. It was either that or I paid for it. So I got out in 4 years, came back here, did commercial insurance. I got a risk management and insurance degree from the, yeah, right? Exactly. The most boring
thing.
Dude,
we could have maybe partied in Athens together. So I graduated high school in 90, which means I spent between 89 and 92 or 3
right,
drinking it up.
Yep.
So maybe we pass each other at fucking Lowry's.
Exactly.
Remember Lowry's. Nickel Night at Lowry's?
Gosh, Lowry's Nickel Night. Do you remember what was the Bladder Buster down below?
I don't know that one. Things.
But yeah, so I was there in 93, 97. So we could. Who knows, man? I was a mess.
Let's talk about that, though. I think being a mess, unless you don't want to talk about it.
No, I'm open, man.
So yeah, it's funny, dude, because like I stopped drinking it. Looking back now is young, right? Yeah. So in 99, I was 27, but at the time I was like, oh man, like I'm like fucked up. Like there were people that had stopped at like 18 or 19 or 15, but looking back, like I think I nipped it in the bud pretty early.
Yeah, I would say so. I quit drinking 7 years ago, December.
Right.
December 13th. And so for me, it was kind of life or death, though, right? I mean, it was.
Well, you say it super casually.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, here's the thing, man. What? You remember like 15, 10 years ago, 12 years, let's see, that was 99, you said? 97?
That was 20 years ago.
20 years ago, right? So you remember 20 years ago in any city, whether it's here, anywhere else, it's hard to connect with people unless you go out and meet people.
There was no social to the media.
You got it. Like, I mean, how do you find. You're trying to quit drinking, right? Where do you go? You know, you find in AA literature, or you find a book, or you find somebody who's been or whose kid went to rehab, or
right,
whatever it may be for that person. For me, it was a 4 year journey to figure out what the real solution kind of became, which was just, you know, it was just surrender basically and start there, right? So yeah, man, no, I'm open about it because I just think if I'm here for anything personally in this world, it's just to be someone that if someone's struggling with anything that would qualify as an addiction related, whatever. You know, underscore drugs, alcohol, shopping, gambling. I don't care. Whatever.
Sex, chocolate.
Sex, chocolate.
All of it.
You name it, man. Whatever your private closet is. I hope to be someone that they can call and say, hey, look, even though I'm on the record about my story.
Right.
The anonymous thing to me, the kind of, that's a sacrificial right that we give to hold someone else's, I believe, privacy. In a way where they feel comfortable enough to go to people like hopefully you or me or whoever and just say, hey, where do I start? And I'm not much of, you know, I have some experience. Hopefully I have some strength and hope, right?
Right.
But I'm a good compass and a good connector of getting people, meeting people with other people. And it's kind of like you reaching out to me, whatever. Like we just say yes, right?
Right. Well, it's like, and I don't know you that well. So some people don't want to talk about it at all. And that's fine too, yeah. Because I'm big on the anonymity piece too, but I'm always free to say, hey, I am. And if you want to say you are, cool, and let's talk about it. But if not, that would be fine too.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
But I do think that it is easy for us to go, yeah, I almost died, blah, blah, blah. Cause like we say all that stuff in the rooms, but like it's like a serious deal to almost die, to need to surrender to something.
Oh, Lord, yeah. I mean, it's not a place I wish anyone to go. I don't wish I have eight and 11 year old daughters, right?
Oh, dude.
Right? So I don't.
I got an 11 year old daughter.
Nice. Cheers.
and a 9 year old son and a 5 year old son.
There you go, man. Future suitors, right? I'll prepare my dowry. You just tell me how many cattle or.
Is that how it works?
I don't know. I've heard in some parts of the world. But no, I think at the end of the day, man, it's. You know, I don't want to be one of these people that tries to be a poster child for sobriety or poster child for recovery. I do think it's cool or maybe relevant or meaningful to let people know that there's things that they can learn from this affliction in the recovery to get through it or to get away from it or to enjoy it. You know, I enjoy it, man. I mean, it is fun not being inebriated for me. Right? For me, it's for a lot of people, man. It's, I mean, for 95%, 98% of the world, it's great, man. I prefer them have a couple beers when we go out and, you know,
loosen them up a little bit.
Loosen up a little, right? There's a lot of tension in our world. Plenty of tension to go around. I just deal with that a different way. But yeah, you're right. It's easy to say I almost died. It's one of the things that one of my gurus, I'll say, that I recall very often. He would say, he would tell people, families of addicts, he'd say, one thing you got to keep in mind is you could come in here and say something that you could create that you thought was the most absurd, disgusting, whatever, and you would be embarrassed to say it. But I challenge you, just try it, because then someone in the room is going to say something 10 times worse than that that will shock you. Because our skin, even though I think I'm a deep feeler, you know, I'm very sensitive down deep. At the end of the day, I think part of recovering is just getting thicker skin and knowing that it's okay to have thick skin and also have a big heart.
Well, I definitely want to hear, obviously, like some roots of Das BBQ. By the way, should I say it like super German?
However you want, man. It's
do people say Guten Morgen?
My dad does. he jokes around a little bit. Like, my mom's side of the family is all Texan, and they have German roots from
right.
The German influence from the but mainly that's the Das BBQ part, Das BBQ. It was kind of a fun. Do you remember the movie Clerks, the black and white film?
Of course.
Clerks, right? We all, anyone that knows that, it kind of
our age, right?
Right?
Kevin Smith film, go check it out.
Yeah, man. So the original black and white film that they said, whoa, you can do that on a, what was it, like $150,000 budget?
Something like that.
Ridiculously low. There was a scene in there with the Crazy Jay's, I believe it was his cousin from Moscow or somewhere, had a band, and his hit song, he was in thrash metal band, and his hit song was Das Berserker.
Right.
And so that's where, when we were, I was studying in Austria in 1996 in Innsbruck for 7 weeks, and that film, some people were talking about it, and somehow, I guess by behavior probably, I came away with the nickname Das Berserker. And so Das just kind of stuck, Das that. And I thought it kind of like left me after the college years, but years later, my sister has children, I become an uncle, and my little nephew and niece started calling me Uncle Das out of the blue. So it just kind of resurfaced, and I said, well, it's sticky. There's something to it.
Right.
So I thought 7 years ago, I bought the URL for Das BBQ. I said, if I ever do barbecue when I retire, from whatever. I was doing brand building at the time. And I'll tell you about that in a second. But I said, if I ever do barbecue, I better go ahead and buy the URL now. And what would I do if I did barbecue? I said, well, three letters, Das BBQ. There's the German side of the Texas part of the story. And I was just really trying to get perfection on brisket and sausage. I mean, after, you know, that side of the family, it's a very different barbecue out there. But regardless, I went ahead and bought the URL. What I didn't know is that I would be talked into doing it 4 years ago, April. So it'll be 4 years and 2 months from now. I'd been in brand building business for about 6 years. And I would come to a crossroads where I had the opportunity to either go bigger in the brand and advertising world, or go, you know, more expansive, or one day barbecue. And it became barbecue.
All right. Well, we're going to hear about that, because I definitely want to hear about brand building as well. But when you said about being a feelings guy, the first thing I thought of is, like, how do you handle, I think this guy's food sucks?
Oh, that's a great question.
Because I know you've had to have it, right?
That's an excellent question. So we were, you know, when we talked to some of our suppliers, and I won't say who and whatever, on the part, our partners are food vendors, suppliers. We were talking not even 2 hours ago. I said, hey, listen, we take some public beating, and that's our, you know, that's part of the business risk and the business reality and of people eating your product and not liking it. And wow, that brisket looks great. Mine was dry last week. I mean, at first it's really like, ooh, it's like stepping into a really hot tub or a really cold lake. And you're like, whoa, that was awful. But what's funny is,
but then you get used to those things.
You get used to two things. And what I realized is, and again, I steal all this from recovery, man. Like, Das BBQ is, all the things that you and I have been used to for a long time. We really try to practice principles before personalities. Ego not welcome. You know, that's all that means to us. We built that business model around that, so that what's the right thing to do when someone decides they're having a bad day and they want to post something, or they just really don't like you, or maybe they feel like you jeopardize their favorite restaurant around the corner or something. You know, what I have to realize is I've been that person. You know, I've been that person lots of times in my life. And when I was that person, I think, what would I respond to? And I think no matter how mad I would get if I was in that other person's shoes or having whatever bad day, I always respond to honesty, courage by the other person, and kindness. You know, kind
Dude, of you're making me feel like I have a horrible program.
No. Why is that? Jeez. Listen, I'm just one.
I should be, because I should be. Well, listen, so it's funny because so I've been podcasting a while.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of reviews and I get a lot of love. And I get that criticism is well, from a spiritual perspective, it's all feedback.
Sure.
Not good or bad. Just like take it in. Like, you know, if 10 people say, well, I heard this phrase before. If 10 people say you're dead, you may want to think about laying down, which is a good one.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe. So if 10 people say, you know, Matt, I think you're a little abrasive, and I want to say, well, I'm not abrasive. It's like, maybe I should look at that. But anyway.
Sure.
And so I do, and you can get people that, like, do you learn anything when people just say, you're amazing, right? You might not learn anything, right?
Great.
So, but just yesterday I read a review about a person that criticized me, and it's about things that, like, it's like, is he listening to my show? Did he mean to write this for, it was so off base that I literally like was like, hey, if you're listening now, like write me, cause let's talk about it. Yeah. And some people might say, what do you care? It's one, you know, you got 80 good reviews and here's this one guy, but it's like, he didn't say, I just don't like Matt's style. It's not worth going into what he did say, but it basically, it'd be like if somebody showed up and to Das BBQ and they went, you know, I had the cheese pizza and it just wasn't very good. And you're like, what? Did you come to my place? Because I don't really serve people. It was really like that.
Oh, is that
not
off?
Not that off, but you get what I'm saying.
Pretty far off.
And I think I'm big enough to think like, hey, I can just take it and move on. But sometimes people do say stuff and it does hurt. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If it resonates and
right. Well, if it's true, right?
And it's true. Yeah. Matt, I don't know. It was really tough at first with certain people. But what I learned in our business is very different, right? I mean, abrasion is good in the business that you're at. I'll do a kind of a two-step pause. I literally had this discussion 2 hours ago again with two of our vendors. They couldn't believe that we had invited them to the same table at the same time. They're each other's biggest competition, but they were surprised, I think, that we said, "Hey, look, we're going to use both of y'all, but we need y'all to be excellent because this is how we're trying to be excellent." And it was a totally different conversation. They thought they were getting thrown under the bus or
did you, but did you let them know the other guy was going to be there?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. We said, bring your A game. But here's the thing, man, there's a book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. I see this book behind me. I grew up with books like this, Guerrilla Marketing, Dave Ramsey,
Good to Great,
you know, Simon Sinek, Start With Why. I mean, there's all these awesome books, but the one I noticed that all of these authors tend to put it in their footnotes was a little book called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, right? And I heard the head of the CDC's communication department talk about this, a lady several years back. And so when she finally said it, I realized there's something to this book, but they talk about the best teams in the world. And granted, this is more of a, you know, we're a team building sport. We cannot expand unless we have a scalable team, right?
Right.
And for years, I thought that they were saying the five dysfunctions of a teen, like T-E-E-N. It's like, what? Why do I want to learn what the five dysfunctions of a teen are? It's team, T-E-A-M.
Right.
But the real short is the best teams in the planet, they have innate trust for one another. And so they say, okay, well, what does that even mean? Kind of like, what is recovery? Whatever. What is trust? You know, is trust a feeling? Is it a set of actions? It almost doesn't matter how you define it. But what it is, what is core and central to trust, I believe, and a lot of these people on these shelves taught me, at least, and I believe, is it starts with healthy conflict. If you can't have healthy conflict between you or me or you and your audience or a person listening, taking their time to listen to you, what I realize is there's going to be healthy conflict that is productive, and sometimes there's just going to be conflict. There's nothing healthy about it in some of these reviews. And in those situations, I've learned for Das BBQ, I'll never forget, I can't say who the media outlet was, but I'm pretty sure you're a big fan of them. All right. And their editor was so cool that this person came on the air and ripped Das BBQ online on this chat room, whatever. And I was almost speechless, like, wow, I guess they've never been over there, or kind of like that. It was almost off topic.
Right.
And I just learned early on, like in those situations, the engagement was not worth whatever outcome I could have hoped for. And what was cool is that, so I learned the art of being slow to speak and quick to listen, even because usually I'm quick to speak and quick to react and quick to respond. But to learning how to just zip it. And what was cool is the editor of this, like the person that put out the article, went on and defended Das Barbecue. He'd never even been there before for us and said, hey, whoa, there's no need to do that. If, in case you've never gone there, let me tell you where you're wrong. And I didn't even have to defend it. So I'm not saying that there's nothing magical or whatever. Maybe that's just kind of letting the universe or spirituality or whatever you ascribe to, sometimes knowing when to engage in the healthy conflict versus when to just say, hey, oh, as much as I don't like it, I got to let it go. Like, let it go, right? I'm bad at that. As a human, I'm not good at not letting things go. So I would say, hey, in your field, like, yeah, but you're designed to do some healthy conflict, to get to ruffle people's feathers in a way that's not to embarrass them or make them uncomfortable. It's just so that you can expose, I think, the goodness and the truths behind stuff you really dig and other people dig, right? Yeah, because that's what the world can learn from. And hey, if people want to expose, I pay attention to my peers and competitors, the people that don't talk about what they do. Those are the people that scare me, because that's what we're against. Like, I learned this from the brand world. We are the Sun and Sons, Wade Thompson, just a genius. But in this book that we put together that he authored, he said, let's be the enemies of mediocrity. And man, that resonates with me.
I had my favorite teacher in high school said, I'm going to pull you out of the muck of mediocrity. I always remember that guy.
That's awesome.
I wanted to find that guy online. I want to have him on my podcast, actually. Mr. Yeah. Slater, my favorite teacher. The only one who I feel like because he made fun. Like, a couple of the kids were like just sort of super rich and snobby, and he totally like kind of called them on it. I was going to say.
Sorry, I know I got you all over the
place. No, that's how the show goes anyway, which is totally fine. This is totally how the show goes, just cool. How I roll. Again, and if some people don't like that, I'm totally okay with it. This is how I do it.
Yeah. It's your thing.
The concept of nothing, of doing nothing, right? That's a big Al-Anon thing. Don't just sit there, do nothing, right?
I've heard, yeah.
Right? Right? Wait, it's like the opposite of that famous saying, which is like, don't just sit there, do something. It's like, don't just sit there, do nothing. And it's almost never wrong to sleep on it. Oh, never. And sleep on it can mean a day or a week or a month. But how many times have you wanted to send the email or text and then slept on it and then woke up and been like, thank God I did not send that text?
If I could count, I mean, a few hundred probably.
Right.
Literally. I mean, how many days have we been in business now? 700, 800 and something? Yeah, I would say probably in the neighborhood of 300-ish.
Right. You know, another great thing I heard about sobriety is that this guy said, for every year I'm sober, I have that many seconds to think before I speak. So like 3 years of sobriety, like 3 seconds before he just said, which by before it was like no seconds, right?
No, that's
awesome. Right? It's awesome, right?
It's like infinity.
Oh, right. So it used to be like no matter what, and now I can like have the thought, not say anything. What's great is that in my world, because I've been writing this obstacle stuff for a while, the community will do that. And one of my early partners said that. He goes, Matt, don't answer. And then watch. And the community took my side. Or there were a few people still negative, and then other people. And then more often than not, they just kind of show their ass that it's about them instead of me even taking it. I think I've just gotten more used to it. It seems like, but I guess it's anything creative, because I feel like, well, writing is easier for me to say, well, I don't care what you think, versus food, which is like this thing that comes, but I guess it all comes from like you're a creative, like whatever. But let's back up.
Totally.
But let's back up.
Sure.
Brand building. What the hell does that mean? That sounds like a marketing guy speak.
Yeah, it's funny, man. Brand. So I was in insurance. I was a property casualty insurance
sounds
producer.
Super exciting.
So exciting.
Very sexy.
The super exciting part was I was scared to death to get a job in 1997. They had the University of Georgia had 100% job placement out of that program. So I just chose it in undergrad. So no rhyme or reason other than it was, I'll get a job. It may suck. I don't know what it's going to be, but at least I'll be able to pay my own car insurance and rent and not have to, you know, cause my parents aren't paying for it. Right? Like this is real grown up stuff. So anyway, it was fascinating from an analytical standpoint, right? Just learning contracts. So I became essentially a contract expert because I got really into the contractual side of property and casualty, errors and omissions, lawyers' malpractice, how insurance policies began, what underwriting was. There's a lot of really nerdy stuff behind it, but it's a huge business. I mean, it's a huge empire that most people don't ever think of unless you're thinking about your homeowners and your auto, right? Or your personal umbrella or your boat or whatever you have, or your motorcycle. But it's just all the business around the world has to buy insurance. They got to buy it from someone. So who do they buy it from? Most of them, a broker, because that's just how it's distributed. So I did that 12, 13 years out of college. And that really was selling. That was selling myself, selling our services, selling the agency, selling the carriers we were representing versus, because I had to get someone else fired, unless they were a brand new business who just needed insurance for the first time. I had to get somebody else fired to take, you know, some other broker fired, and they would get me fired if I lost the job, right? The business. So you get used to doing that. And the word sales after 13 years was a really dirty word for me. Sale is a 4-letter word, right? You know, you can put that in a book. You can write that book. I didn't want to sell anything anymore. I didn't want to feel like a salesperson, like a, you know, like a whatever you think of that makes your stomach sick. So when I got into brand, I sold my business back to the company, sat in coffee houses for about a year, was at a place in personally in my life where I knew things had to get better or else they were going to get really bad. And so I just took a year to try to clear my head with coffee, you know, and that took a little while. That took a while to catch on for me. It took, that was what, 11 years ago, 12 years ago, right? So, but I learned while I was in coffee houses, I decided to learn Adobe as best as I could so that I could do on a computer what I've always loved to do with my hands, which is illustrating. And I'm not a great illustrator, but I've done some work illustrating in college. And I knew I wanted to do something creative. I didn't want to be a graphic designer. I didn't know what a creative director really even was at that point. I didn't really know what brand building meant either. But what I knew I wanted to do was help build people's awesome ideas. And visual being the first kind of a check mark when you hear the word beauty, like visual being something that's so paid attention to, and audio right behind that, video, audio, that there was something to build, doing creative brand-related work. And I grew up around a mom who was a corporate psychologist, basically, Myers-Briggs. She was one of the first licensed Myers-Briggs people in 1982 or 3, I believe.
The famous personality tests.
You got it.
Which one are you?
I was an ENFP, but I haven't been tested in a while. And it's a really interesting story.
Is that the entrepreneur one?
Extrovert.
Right.
Extrovert.
But there's one they call the entrepreneur one.
Probably, yeah.
Because I'm that one. Like, yeah. I didn't already know it, but then I was like, oh, yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I would think ENFP would. It fits a lot of people who are, who are cliff divers, you know, risk takers. and I never thought I would be, you know, that. I think extrovert to me used to mean something different. But there's a cool story there. But regardless, I grew up around a mom that was helping leaders, you know, that were at milestones get better. Like, make decisions to, hey, how am I going to be great? So I got this this brand kind of archetype corporate psychology thing, and I've got this love for art and skateboarding and creative and soccer and all the X sports, you know, snowboarding, all the stuff that wasn't the super popular stuff, but I loved it. And when I realized that, wow, there's so many of that kind of personality type in the brand building world, graphic design, you know, storytelling, writers, podcast people in journalism. I mean, understanding the media, the part of the media that you don't wake up and put on the TV, you realize there's this whole world of amazing people like you. There's storytellers and interviewers and the media that you don't, that doesn't ask for credit necessarily as much as some other people try to make themselves known. I realized there's this whole underworld of creativity, and we just call it brand building, which is taking someone else's business idea, helping them bring it to life with visual sensation, audio sensation, story, relevance, brand archetyping, going back to some Jung stuff, right? Like Jung and Myers and Briggs were a succession of Jung's thinking. They just were trying to bring personality types into the real world to help people find jobs during World War I and World War II, to place people in jobs more readily and easily, primarily women. It was a mother and a daughter team, Myers and Briggs. So there's all this cool stuff. So I found a good friend of mine, Wade Thompson, after I'd been building websites for a couple of years, just doing some basic, just fundamental kind of brand work with other people's logos, with their existing material, making some videos. I teamed up with another guy, and Wade brought me on board to Sun & Sons and said, hey, you've got some skills you probably are unaware of, and I'd like for you to join us. And it was like, dude, it was like, Matt, like being on a space shuttle where I was cleaning the toilet. And it took off, and they realized I was on there, and I was like, "Uh oh!" I said, "Uh oh! I guess you're going with us on this journey."
Right?
It literally was that shocking to me that he believed in me like that, and that we share a lot in common, and have a lot of just the same respect for the principles that we're after in life. And I had a great 3.5 year career with them on a rocket ship that I didn't think I had any business being part of. But learned a whole lot about what it takes to build brands by sitting down with someone or a group of people and just doing what you're doing, which is just talking to them and getting out of them what's already in there. Like, we weren't creating brands. We were just helping let them see their kind of psychological or philosophical or ideological blind spots so that we could then pull that stuff out and go, hey, is this the gold you're talking about? And then watch their eyes light up, and then take that and put some visual perspective to it, so that it comes to life through all the things I mentioned, like visual design, graphics. They don't like to be called graphic designers, right? Story, written, copywriters. I did a lot of copywriting and editing. Wade's a phenomenal everything on that whole spectrum. But watching people take their brand assets and go, wow, and then go win contracts and go earn business that they were not earning before, or clarifying their stories, where people knew what they stood for, not just what they looked like. That was fascinating. And so I took all of that 3.5 years or almost 4 years ago, April, and I had the chance to say, hey, you're at a crossroads. Sun & Sons is no longer an option. So you're going to do one, two, or what are your three things? And my third thing was, well, one day barbecue. And that's where...
Why were they not an option anymore?
Sun & Sons, because of a trajectory of their business that I would let Wade tell you about, okay, and to some decisions he made and needed.
But they're not around anymore. Would that be the short answer?
No, they're around.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, they're... Shoosh. You want your brand built? You got to be able to afford...
All right. Before I forget, awesome. Before I forget, yes. What font is your logo?
Got two fonts. Prestige Elite is the small writing.
Right.
That's the kind of the typewriter look.
Right.
And you have DIN... which is the headline. It's more of the,
what's your hat?
Okay. That's a custom logo type. So that is, yeah, they actually built that. It's based, you can find some Germanic fonts that this is fashioned after. In fact, if you go to some of the old Western, what was the one? If I said it, not High Noon or something, one of the old Western TV shows.
Right.
You'll see this font with the flares.
Right. Flare. Death Valley Days or something.
You got it. And it's something like that.
Right.
But if you look closely and you try to draw it, or it's not a font. You can get in real big trouble for that. There are some local brands that they've just used a font in their logo, and they get asked to cease and desist or else they got to pay royalties. So this is an actual custom logo type.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting hearing you, talk about you being so passionate about those things. And I'm someone that grew up a cynic, and marketing is evil and government's evil and advertising's evil. And, I've been a salesman my whole fucking life pretty much. Right. And I found that out by accident. Like you, I'm like, I'm not gonna be a salesman. My dad was a salesman. They're slimy. They're whatever. Right. All those things that we think, car salesman, bad suits. And then it turns out, the word I like to use is enrollment. Right. That's what I found my core strength is. I'm good at saying, hey, come on over here, do this with me. Yeah. Whether it's come listen to this or come watch this, or this is why you should advertise with me, or this is why you should work for me for probably less than you're worth, because that's all I can afford right now. Mm-hmm. It's just enroll. Hey, man, come be a part of this thing that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But when I had a staffing company and I would go to these like marketing conferences, I would be blown away. They'd have some people, a client and a brand or whoever, like presenting like their story of a cool campaign they ran. And I'm like, these are some of the smartest fucking people, yeah. These are some awesome people, and they're earning a living. They're trying to just put together a good product. Like, they're not evil. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So do you have any of that with as a guy, as a brand builder, as like, all these people just want to get more money. Like,
yeah.
This whole idea of understanding your customer, But especially now, right, they know everything about us, right?
Yeah.
Anybody who says, like, well, I don't want to give my social security number or whatever, I'm like, listen, do you use Google? Do you ever order anything from Amazon? Are you on Facebook at all? They already know everything. They know everything.
Yeah.
So anyhow.
That's a good one.
Right.
Yeah.
But once you're on any of those platforms, you're donezo. And I've just accepted it as part of life.
Me too.
But so how do you feel about that? About sort of the dark side of of advertising?
I'm the king cynic. I think every morning I wake up, I probably wake up on the wrong side of bed. That's just my natural state. But the reality is, to your point, I would say the analogy I might use to answer the question would be, you know, it's like music. I love music. I don't dislike any particular genre, right? Because I think there's amazing purists, artists, crazy people that just grind at what they do because they love it in every genre of anything, of music-wise. So I think it's kind of one of those things maybe I discovered that not everybody was selling something that they're full of shit about. Although there's plenty of that, right? I believe there's both. But what Wade Thompson, I got to give him a lot of credit, man. He's just my third grade best buddy, skate rat, artistic guru. They did all of the brand work for Das Barbecue for a price that I could never have, like what they would normally charge. It was a gift, right? And what he said is, when I asked him, I said, you really think I could do this barbecue thing? He goes, listen, man, imagine how decent you've done, maybe decent, well, whatever, or average at, quote unquote, selling things before this career. He said, imagine how amazing or how good you could be at just presenting something that you already know how to do really well. So the idea from selling to presenting, kind of like your idea of, from selling to engaging or enrolling, as you call it. I love that. Collaborating, man. Like really just saying, hey, I can't offer you much, but I can offer you a good jam. Right. We might write a killer song.
Right.
Right?
Right.
It's so, I that always stuck to me. Like, wow, imagine if I could. If I'm just presenting, man, I'm not selling shit.
Right.
I'm just presenting.
Right.
Something that I love and I'm passionate about. And I just got under the mindset, as you know, like a lot of us do, it's like, it's not that I don't care about money, but the idea of money does not get me out of bed. If that were the case, I would have been foolish to leave commercial insurance. That is a long-term, solid, foundational security.
Everybody needs insurance.
I mean, exactly. And it's not going to be government mandated in that world anytime soon or ever. I didn't wake up because I was excited about money, but I do have some expensive habits, and I have a couple of daughters. I'm a single dad. Didn't plan on being that way. But in order to have that, to do some things.
One mom or two moms?
One mom.
Good job. All right.
Thank you, man. She's amazing, man. She, golly, I thank on my knees and thanks every day about that we were able to do it right. That's all recovery related.
Right.
I didn't have a prayer otherwise.
Yeah.
So, to answer your question, yeah, the dark side, I get off just like anybody else from time to time and hope that the cameras aren't rolling. You know what I mean? Because I can be nasty, spiteful. Again, I've been that guy. I've been that everybody at one point or another, and people have forgiven me enough. People have trusted in us enough. I say, like, Das Barbecue, it's a story of 30-second chances because we don't have to give everybody 30-second chances in our business. That would be, from a fiduciary standpoint to our investors, that'd be foolish. To let people continue to show up late for their work or high or whatever else, it's just obvious. I can only give so many chances as an employer, but what I can do is have compassion and really bake that into our DNA.
Well, interesting you say that. So one of my favorite interviews I've done was with Delia from Delia's Barbecue.
Yeah.
And, you know, she started the famous breakfast place as well.
Not the chicken sausage.
But before that, she started Flying Biscuit.
Flying Biscuit, yes.
And she talked about, you know, she's worked in restaurants her whole life, and she talked about, you know, being that girl that stayed up till 3 a.m. and then came to work the next day. And she knows that's who she's hiring, but she's been able to make that work.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So, like, she talks about, like, that community of servers and waiters and hosts and people who, like, you know, she knows that's the lifestyle, and you could still find solid people. So I guess that's my question for you, is that if the food industry typically can be, you know, party people or people that might be a bit hungover or like, so how do you, I mean, do you have like a fucking one strike? Like how do you manage that stuff?
That's a really good question. And in some ways I think you got to let other people manage it for you. I would just say the model at which you're working is a really big deal in any business, but in specifically in restaurants. You notice we don't have any servers. So there's a whole, we are a counter service. I don't think I'm cut out to handle or manage or make great a server centric model like a Houston's or somewhere, you know what I mean? That is just taking it upon themselves.
Houston's just closed, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. The one at Lenox.
The big famous one.
Yeah. So there's a whole story there. But let's just say, what's your favorite place where you get served in Atlanta? One of them. A couple of them. Like where you get served by great waiters, waitresses, hosts. Is there somewhere that's one of your favorites? Like mine would maybe be, oh, where have I gone just recently? It was like, I love.
Does the Waffle House count?
Your waffle, of course. Yeah, we went there. We went to the one on Northside Drive the other day, me and Glenn, who's with me, and we love it. He's in the Waffle House Management Training Program. So, yeah, love Waffle House. That's a great study, by the way, if you ever look under the hood.
Well, I've been trying to get big wigs from Waffle House on the show for a while. So,
really?
Yeah. Have not succeeded.
Talk to him.
All right.
Yeah, talk to Glenn, man. They're with the right enrollment.
Right.
They can be, there's some cool people. But regardless, I guess I would say I made a decision when I finally realized that the Texas model is really a true counter service model in barbecue.
Right.
It came from butchers.
All right. Well, but let's talk, as I definitely wanted to ask you this, because I know we don't have a ton of time.
Sure.
Which is fine. We can always come back. We can always do it again.
Sure.
Have you been to Kansas City?
No, I've not been to Kansas City. My father's been a lot.
So supposedly they got the best, right? Supposedly. Some people would say Texas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when you say Texas style, you mean what exactly?
Texas in my set of vernacular is brisket and sausage.
Right.
Specifically, those two products.
What are the other things?
Well, if I think of Kansas City, gets caught more in the what I would say Texas lineage. You got to understand the roots from both Kansas City, I believe, but certainly in Central Texas in most parts. The barbecue temples we refer to, a lot of them, if not most of them, used to be butcher shops back in the 1850s to 1930s, right? And some of the ones that survived the Depression, they started selling their smoked brisket, smoked sausage. If you notice a theme between the two, those are both the throwaway meats. That's what they were feeding their family. They started feeding those to their customers. So you have St. Louis, you know, is, I don't know the whole history of where people, where they settled, how they settled. Were they coming back east? Did they get caught going west, went too far north? You know, I don't know. I don't know. It's all in St. Louis, but I do know my dad's been there a lot. Is it Arthur Bryant's?
But when you say brisket versus what?
Pork.
Like pulled pork.
You got it.
Got it.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Trying to keep the listener engaged as well.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay, this is real simple. Cow versus pig.
Right.
So, South Georgia, East Coast barbecue is all swine.
Right.
You know, whole hogs.
Right.
You got it.
Right.
So, in fact, barbecue in French Polynesians, where it originated, the term, nose, was it snout to tail?
That's right? What it means. Yeah. Barbecue.
Yeah, there you go. Barbecue.
Like
butterfly sample.
Right.
Snout to tail. It just means the practice of cooking a whole animal.
Right.
Snout in particular, we think of what? Like pigs.
Right.
Pigs and goats. So Texas being cattle, and then sausage, beef and pork. But I mean, sausage, you know, it's just a throwaway. A lot of it mainly cattle. So cattle versus pig. Cow versus pig. And brisket, out of 50 cuts of meat on a cow, brisket ranks consistently at number 49, second to last. I mean, bottom of the barrel. So it's like, I call it the lotus flower of meat. So if you had brisket in the Northeast at Carnegie Deli, you ever had a Reuben?
Yep.
Right? Corned beef.
You're talking to a Jewish person.
There you go. So if you think about what was happening in the Northeast.
You give me a good Reuben, I'm happy as fuck.
Me too. I love it. And it's what do they do to get the brisket that tender?
You tell me.
They pickle it, right? Because try to cook a brisket in a on a grill or in a stove,
whatever. Right?
It is there's not enough time to talk about why it's ornery, but it's hard to cook. It's hard to do right. So Texas, German influence, 1850, 1852, and beyond in Central Texas, they were smoking brisket instead of pickling it. And the first time we saw brisket on a commercial menu, as far as I know, I think it was in 1868, was the first advertisement that people can find for selling brisket, smoked brisket,
right,
versus pickled brisket, which is corned beef.
Right.
Yeah. So Southeast Georgia, my dad's side of the family, right? Metter, everything's better in Metter off I-16, right? He grew up in that area and in Jacksonville, right? So that's all whole hog.
I was just in Jacksonville.
There you go. So he grew up in Mandarin, just on the St. John's side. I don't know the area that well, honestly.
Right.
But that's where he grew up around smoking whole hogs. So down at the farm where we build these smokers that we have in our smokehouse, my uncle builds them, his older brother. He's building two for us right now.
Right.
One for us, one for somebody else. And on this new smoker, you're going to love it. I'm going to have you over. One of the doors is a double door so you can smoke a whole hog on this.
Dude, I got to come and bring the video camera. We'll make some cool content shit.
I'd love to. I mean, and that's why
I have not been to your place, by the way, yet.
Oh, you're going to love it. I mean, if you like metal, even if you don't like the food, I hope you'll like the people and you'll like the atmosphere. You may not like the product, but the people I hope you really love. And I hope you like heavy metal and the stuff that we have around there.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think, that's the DOS too, though, right?
Yeah, man.
Fucking
DOS Berserker.
Right, exactly. If I remember, yeah. I'll cut to that clip. But yeah. That's the fucking, we're doing the devil horns right
that's
here. Right, the fucking rock and roll devil horns.
I'm talking about, yeah, I'm teaching little kids everywhere.
Right.
But so that's real. There's that industrial meets outlaw meets rock and roll. You notice the guitar pick, right?
Right. Well, I was going to ask you, is that a guitar or a keyhole there?
Both. So music is the key to my inner soul. It's just so important.
If I was a chick, I would want to sleep with you right now.
Thank you.
That is a deep, deep line.
You know? But no, I just drew this symbol in the brand world. This is a playoff of the Dead Kennedys tattoo logo.
Look
remember?
At you. Do you know, Jason Green?
Jason. Yeah. Wait.
So he's in the beer distributor world,
okay.
But he's also a race director. He Yeti Trail Runners, and he's an ex skate rat, and he seems like you would dig his vibe. I don't know if y'all serve liquor or alcohol at all.
We serve beer and wine,
okay.
Which is funny. I hold beer and wine license, right? Which is that's an anomaly in its own. Really cool how to get it. But the next steps that we do, and maybe at Collier Road, we'll serve liquor too. But just at that location, we just don't have a ton of true nightlife.
Right.
So maybe some bourbon and some vodka, but something simple.
Right.
We're not going to be asked to do a chocolate martini, you know.
If you were going to go to barbecue, not at Das Barbecue, where would you go?
Oh, man. My three favorites?
Yeah.
Four, really, there's, my Lord, there's so many of them. But here, in no particular order,
okay,
I will say Fox.
Right.
Community.
Right.
Heirloom. Old Brick Pit. You know, that's in Oglethorpe. That's the most, that's just over in Brookhaven. Those would be my first four that I go to inside Atlanta city limits, okay? And then if you want to talk about who do I go to, and there's a lot of other great ones, by the way. I mean, we got friends all over.
I was going to say, do you like roll with those guys? Do you hang with those guys?
I try to. I really try. I've met the Pitmasters and people, Greater Good, Lovey's, and they're good, great dudes.
What was the spot? What was the spot right over here in Edgewood?
Oh, Greater Good?
Is that what they were called?
Are they not there?
They're not there anymore.
Oh, no.
It looked like an old gas station.
Gosh, well, they converted a building down there in Kirkwood. No, that was in Kirkwood.
No, not Kirkwood.
This is a different spot. They converted
I'm talking about Edgewood where
you're talking about Rolling Bones?
Yeah.
Years ago.
Oh, has that been that long?
Rolling Bones, good Lord. I mean, if it's the one I'm thinking of.
It looked like a gas station.
Yeah, it's like blue.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was we're aging ourselves, right?
Well,
Rolling Bones, as I remember it, it was the first place in Atlanta besides Fox Brothers that I could buy brisket and be excited about it. And there was a Jamaican influence to it. But that was a long time ago. And I may have just read something where that person or that group maybe opening up something else in South Atlanta somewhere. I could be totally wrong, but that's the one I think of, the old gas station. It was only around a couple of years.
I feel like I went there not that long ago, but it must have been years ago.
Maybe so, man. I don't know. Like, again, I paid real close attention to where can you get brisket in Atlanta.
Right.
And the only place you could get it for a long time was Fox Brothers, and then you had some others. And,
So a place like Fox Brothers, mm-hmm. institution, they were like welcoming to you, and you were like, hey, I'm the new guy in town, when you showed up to whatever, you know, barbecue commissioned events there were, or I don't know, you know, Chamber of Brisket or whatever. I don't know how you guys get
Chamber
together.
Chamber of Brisket, that's fun.
Or like, fun. I assume there's some sort of like BBQ contest, you know, that kind of thing.
You know, I can't speak for brands themselves and the companies themselves. What I can say is anyone that we've talked to on an individual level has been real supportive and has been really cool. And there's that competitive factor that gets in the way sometimes of any business enterprise or going. But what I can say is eventually they've all become in their own ways very supportive. I think they realized we're out to do one thing. We want Georgia to be known as the best, the capital, the mecca for great, excellent, world-class, champion-grade barbecue on the East Coast, period.
And who's our competition on the East Coast?
Bingo. Alabama, South Carolina, right? People like to think there's this competition about, well, what style are you like or whatever? And I said, look, style, if 90% of people that ask that question are referring to, they want you to answer in terms of sauce. Well, sauce has nothing to do with barbecue in my world. I mean, it's great. I love to use it on a sandwich, but that's not what we're talking about. Sauce was an origination, essentially.
Do you have old school squirt bottles?
Yeah, we got three different types.
Which are?
Just DOS Red.
Right.
Which we use octane coffee espresso in it.
Nice.
Yep. We have DOS, the yellow peach, okay. which has a peach puree base.
Right.
It's like a mustard yellow.
Right.
And then we have Hogmop. H-O-G, Hogmop, because sauce initially, as far as
we
know.
Is there an umlaut over the O in Hogmop?
We think so, right? We thought about doing that, and then we said, no, we better not do that. But Hogmop, it's when you're smoking a whole hog, and you, depending on your contraption, you're soaking it down on the outside. It's really to prevent evaporative cooling from happening and prevent the skin from charring, because ribs in the centerpiece, the strap and the loin, that cooks a lot faster, about three times quicker than the shoulder and the ham. So mopping became a thing, cooking whole hogs to keep the real tender parts covered before tinfoil was readily available and other ways to cover it.
Right.
It just helped really keep the surface cool and to help not burn the middle meat.
Interesting. All right. we always wrap up with the Atlanta favorites. Questions. Okay. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Well, we've made a couple references to a couple of these questions, but I always start with, what is your go-to order at the Waffle House?
Oh, my God.
I ask everybody that.
All American.
Not just feed.
All American with pecan waffle.
Most common answer is all American. Okay. And I ask everybody this, what is your current go-to restaurant?
Oh.
Doesn't have to be barbecue, anything.
My current go-to. Woo. And man, I'm just going to say Marcel.
Okay. All right.
If I'm going to eat out.
No, that's fine. You can totally do that. Yeah. Complete the sentence. I take Marta blank.
As an alternative to taking my own vehicle.
Okay. Most common answer, to the airport.
Oh, I do that.
And also never. Some people answer as never.
No, every time I airport, yes.
Rank these things in important to you.
All right.
Braves, Falcons, Hawks, United.
United, Braves, Falcons, Hawks.
I knew you were going to say United. You're a hipster, aren't you?
I'm a soccer guy.
Oh, that's right. You told me you were a soccer guy.
Yeah.
Well, when I have you on again, we're going to talk about that. I have a lot of thoughts about soccer, and we'll talk about that later.
Sure.
What is the best festival you've ever been to in Atlanta?
Hmm. Gee, in Atlanta. Oh, Streets Are Alive was pretty amazing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It ran right by my house one year, the West End. Yeah.
Very cool. I'll go with that. And then I think the Little Five Points Halloween, you just can't beat that.
Right. Pretty dope. Yeah. And the final question I ask is, who should I have next on the Atlanta podcast?
They have to be in Atlanta?
No.
Jenny from Jenny's Ice Cream.
Okay. Do we know her?
Sure.
Let's make that happen.
Let's do it.
Where is she?
She's Ohio. But a hell of a story and an amazing inspiration.
Okay. But you know her?
met her a couple of times. I could probably get a hold of her.
All right. I did have one more question.
Yeah.
Tell people where you are located so they can come try your food.
Sure. Okay. We're 1203 Collier Road, right near the intersection of Collier Road and Howell Mill Road, which is the Howell Mill exit on I-75.
Across from or next to what?
Next to Verde and De Palma's. And a gas station.
All right, dude.
And Big Easy. Don't forget the best Cajun in Atlanta. They're awesome.
All right. We'll talk more later, dude.
Rock and roll.
All right. That is going to wrap it up. Great story, right? Told you. Go check out Steven. Go get yourself some brisket over at Das BBQ. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be doing this every single Wednesday. You can do us a huge favor if you like this program. Drop in the old iTunes. And leave a review. We're also available on the Spotify. I don't know if you can you do reviews on the Spotify? Somebody let me know. Anyways, I said a bunch of cool episodes coming up, including the return of my main man, Nick Tapp, who introduced me to so many great people, and a lot of other really good stuff in the can as well. So stay tuned. Oh, quick shout out to RCR, where I'm sitting right now here at RCR Video, makers of amazing, compelling content, video-wise and whatnot. Do you want to make some good video? How about renting some podcast space? How about you like to sit right where I'm sitting and record your program? We could do that too. Drop me a note. MattBDavis@iCloud.com. ATL Podcast on the Instagram. Love you, miss you, mean it, everybody. I've got to run. Now, what did I say last time? Stay woke, ATL. Gotta go, ATL. What did I say last time? I thought I was going to get a thing going. Stay woke's a little too much, right? How about just see ya, ATL? See ya, ATL.